Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Yeah, you're gosh darn right it is.
And Brian Brushwood.
You're golly dogget dang doodled.
So, gentlemen, we got a lot of awesome stuff going on. It's one of these things I had to call a bunch of things because so many cool things have happened this week. Brian, I sent you a news article with a video clip, which is sort of, we could, you know, kind of a fun way to sort of start this thing. And this takes place not too far from where I have a house in South Florida. And it's, you know, we love to do things in South Florida, like create artificial reefs, you know. And it's not just enough that we'll drop like some concrete blocks or an old ship or something like that. We're getting crazy artistic with our reefs now. Like it can't just be something. It's not about the fish. Not about the coral, guys. No, it's about us in creating underwater things to go sightsee. The latest one is a $500,000 installation art piece that they wanted to set off the coast of Deerfield Beach. And Bri, you got that?
Yeah, yeah. Here we go. Let me hit play.
Much anticipated sinking of the Rapa Nui Artistic Reef Project off of Deerfield Beach started well with perfect skies and calm seas.
Bunch of Eastern Islands.
Yeah,
dudes.
By the way, yeah, you see a bunch of like giant heads. It looks like it's sort of if Disney were to create what looks like the ruins of an ancient civilization.
It's Easter Island. Yeah. I mean, it's Easter Island, guys. They're like 20 foot tall and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're gigantic. Let's also just give a little bit of context to folks who are not from the area. Number one, Deerfield Beach is in Palm Beach, which is next to – it's not quite – you might think South Florida. You might think South Beach, right? Or you might think some of the hedonistic rum rudder elements of South Florida. Deerfield Beach is certainly a beach community, which has everything that goes along with being a beach community. But it is not exactly – nightclubs and cocaine in the way that people might assume something close to Miami would be. It is far more the Palm Beach aesthetic.
More pain pills.
Yeah, no, certainly. Number two, these are Eastern Island totems that have been erected and are going to be sunk there. Which
they're on a barge.
Yeah, from a barge, which would be very – I mean, obviously, a lot of times what this is for snorkeling. People like to snorkel and scuba dive. So to have some of the wildlife coalesce around these would be obviously very fun and interesting. It has no cultural significance to the area for which it is being sunk, which is kind of what they're going for.
Which, by the way, I don't mind. I mean, I think we live in a postmodern universe, and if the purpose, you know, if we're going to be eco-poets for the purpose so that we can, you know, go down on spring break and snorkel around and take a look at beautiful stuff, you know, might as well, sure, yeah, throw some Easter Island on there.
I'm all for it. I don't think everything needs to be exactly, you know, tied to where it was in historical context. I do think it's interesting that if you could choose anything – that you go with this specific island culture as opposed to, I don't know, like a spaceship or anything. Like if everything is going to be out of space and time, it's curious that this is exactly where they went.
So what they do is they have these, they're erected some as high as 20 feet tall on top of a barge. And the plan is to sink the entire barge and gently lower everything to the sea.
Now, is there a set method to sink barges? Uh-oh.
I'll play the audio, Brian.
All right, sure thing. So it seems to be going down a little bit lopsided. All right, a little bit top heavy, this barge, as it flips on its side to the dismay of some Florida citizens. And eventually goes upside down. Oh, dear.
So the plan was to have the barge gently lower itself down to the sea. And then what happens is one side flips up over the other. And it goes, slides into the sea, and then the concrete things fall first, and then the barge slams down on top of it, destroying everything.
Just a bit outside.
Do we get to see how it looks? I mean, surely they took cameras.
No.
Oh, they didn't?
No.
They didn't want to show us?
I don't think they got
You probably wouldn't be able to. At the time that it's down there, it's probably all super cloudy.
Yeah. Wow. A for effort, though.
Here, I mean, how funny is it that what they designed to be a perfectly set up ruin of an ancient time, like, turned into an actual ruin of a modern time?
maybe there's some poetry to that. We could say it's all on purpose, right? All part of the show, folks.
What's hilarious is that what you can't see is, you know, listen, I'm sure this happened sometime during the weekend. You got a lot of people in Florida. It's a gigantic boating community. What you have, how many boats would you say are out there, Brian?
Oh, it looks like easily, you know, we'll say 100 spread around in a circle around there.
Yeah, so they're all watching this. And as you might imagine, you know, it's people out there in the Florida sun drinking, you know, splitting a case and just having a good time out there on the boat. Like, just laughing at what has to be, I mean, millions of dollars?
Half a million dollar project is what they said.
$500,000 project.
You know, and it's also, I don't know, it's a fairly hippie-ish, you know, project to boot, too. That's a bummer, because I'm actually really in favor of that kind of ecoscaping stuff. I'm sorry that it went poorly for them.
Well, it's still going to be there. Right? Now they're dredging it up.
I mean, to be like, honest, there's
not
more
going to look the way they wanted it.
There's
to
more
look.
Of an authentic story now than there ever was associated with it, right?
No, absolutely. And really, I mean, the big problem here, for whatever, how, I mean, obviously, somebody. You know, the nature of comedy is somebody walks out in the most expensive suit in the world and then a bird poops on them. It's funny, right? So, yeah. Like, somebody spending a lot of money and having it go sideways is going to be funny to people.
I mean, look, as anthropologists have said, we laugh when we are surprised and we laugh when we feel superior. And a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B here.
But ultimately... someone just got a decimal wrong, right? In terms of, like, how to submerge that barge.
In their defense, it's not like there's a federal study of how to sink boats in the evenest way possible. I mean, it's not like there's a real popular...
Well, there are... I mean, there's research, I mean, into that for creating reefs and stuff and doing that. And I don't know who is the one that decide? Because, like, you know, in doing oil rigs and a lot of other stuff and doing in shipbuilding and stuff, there are, you know, there is expertise there. I don't know if the expertise could have solved this problem. I don't know what expertise was brought to bear on it.
And I guess I'm looking through the article. I don't see the method by which they caused it to sink. I don't know if they pulled a plug or what.
Well, I think the idea was to strategically make the barge unstable. And slowly pull that down, hopefully using the gigantic weight of the reef to kind of act as a way that it was pushed down. I guess I don't know whether or not they were sacrificing the barge itself so that would live forevermore at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, it was supposed to have the whole barge go down. But I think, you know, the problem is like as something starts to sink, you're going to get your air's going to go into certain pockets. It's going to want to start going to one areas, and then you just start reinforcing that. And it's a challenge. And you know, the way that you would probably do this if you wanted to guarantee an even thing is you would need to have other support structures there and make the barge already heavy, and then, you know, cut the supports or whatever, or use blasting things to make sure that all the air escapes at the same time. You know, in my vast experience in naval sabotage.
Well, in sinking boats, yeah.
Yeah. So,
you just put it on Wayne Newton's yacht.
High five, great Easter Island reef sinkers. Here's to you. We wish you the best. Good luck.
And by the way, I know that we do have a lot of people out there who listen to the show in all parts of the world. Of course, Andrew and I hail from South Florida. If there are any scuba divers among you,
oh, dude,
like to take pictures,
original reporting, weird thing style,
this sunken ruin. We will be very excited to discuss them. You can be a part. I mean, in fact, do we want to put a bounty?
Yeah, dude. We want
the Diamond Club.
Let's
throw symbol.
Let's make the bounty not a cash bounty, but like I'll throw in a surprise pack from Scam Stuff, like $100 worth of Scam Stuff.
No, we're doing cash. $5. I will give you $5 of my own money.
Okay.
I just need original pictures. of the botched Eastern Island Deerfield Beach situation. Go ahead and grab your scuba gear and head on out.
You know what? And here's the thing. Not only will you get $5 from Justin Robert Young, but all three of us will autograph it. You will get the world's only.
Send $5 to every one of us. We will all sign it, and we will send it to you. Yeah, just go to the quarter deck down there. There's the whalebone. I think you can get a good clam chowder. It's going to be a good time.
Something tells me that you could walk down literally anywhere on the street and say, hey, where'd that boat sink upside down? And they'll be able to point you in the general direction.
This is super, super amazing. And people are saying, should this be the Weird Things ROV project? You know, I'll tell you what.
Oh, damn straight.
We can just drop it. Listen, there's that Deerfield Beach pier. We can just walk into the end, just drop it on off and have a good time.
Oh, that would be great. That'd be great. We could get up there. We could report like breathlessly, like it's one of the mysteries of the ancients. It's like, according to legend, 3 weeks ago, a barge sank out here, developed by insane people who spent their riches.
We did a thing there once because there was UFO reports from there, the inlet.
Yeah.
Remember, there was like our underwater UFO reports and stuff are off of the Deerfield Beach Inlet. I remember we did a little Weird Things scoping out the territory there.
We did, yeah. We went out to the pier. They're actually, the pier in Deerfield Beach is rad. If you've never been to or if you were in South Florida, that is one of the more underrated beaches because it's not as packed and it's super awesome.
Gentlemen?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a hypothetical question.
All right.
I want to know, we're all in agreement that robots are coming.
Shoot.
Yeah.
They're AI.
They might be our friends. They might be our enemies. They might be our lovers. We don't know.
But literally.
We have an alternative which doesn't get explored a whole lot other than you get the crazy sci-fi story where one man uploads himself and it becomes a digital version of himself and then always becomes evil. Always. Because, you know. What
because
else?
Movie
what
tickets.
Other stories could there possibly be? Ray Kurzweil. You know, that super pessimistic guy. He was head of engineering.
Keyboard impresario.
Yeah. Head of engineering for Google has come out and said, and I like this quote from Googler says, he's a Googler, you're a Googler. Googler says, we'll all be human robot hybrids by 2030. And I don't think that he said, we'll all be, you know. And that's one of the problems in science reporting in general is that it's done by people who are, you know, under deadlines, don't really care, whatever, and we'll just sort of, you know, whatever. But anyhow.
Even if you go with that, I would say everyone who has the ability to will be.
Yes, I agree. But there's a difference between one where you're talking about, you know, where's the technology going to be, and then socially speaking that, oh, no, we will all, it's like, well, wait. Yeah, I think that technologically, I think Kurzweil, it's frustrating to see somebody twist this into a thing like, well, I won't be, you know, and then therefore they discount the whole thing. Well, no. That's not what he said. That's some reporter, you know, making up this sensational headline.
Yeah.
It's false.
Well, and it's also kind of frustrating for people to, I mean, like Kurzweil, this comment is not necessarily crazier than or off topic from what he has been saying for years, right? But you put Google in front of it in the headline because he draws a paycheck from Google now. And now it's like, oh, big major company says you better be a robot or else get out of here, loser.
And this was at the Singularity Summit or is this just a file photo?
Yes, this was the latest Singularity Summit apparently. And this is a statement. And basically what he talked about, he kind of explained the technology a little bit more in describing, basically implants that go inside of the brain that are basically like designed DNA. So it's not like you have big, thick hardware jacks in the back of your head and stuff. This would be very wetware, softer, sort of, you know, more biological than what we'd recognize as a microchip kind of thing that connects into your head and then allows you to load up onto the cloud, back up yourself to your cloud. He says he thinks we can do this by 2030, by 2030, 15 years from now. Technologically, he says, Chris Kurzweil, again, says that we'd be able to start doing that, and by 2040, you could have we'd be doing most of your processing on the cloud itself.
I think that is delightfully optimistic, and he's proven me wrong in other ways. So I certainly hope he's right in this case. But man, I'll be impressed if 15 years from now, in 2030, we even have just audio implants or rechargeable, you know, permanent hearing aid style upgrades that can recharge. I mean, it's like I'd be impressed if we get that far in 15 years.
When you say like hearing aid upgrades that can recharge, what I mean is
mass acceptance. Like right now, it is socially acceptable to walk around with earbuds in your ears, but that's a fairly dumb way to have audio, you know, whether it's, you know, constantly listening to podcasts or audiobooks or taking phone calls or receiving audio information, whether it's, you know, cues, you know, that's another thing is you're driving and you know, the voice comes on and tells you turn left here, turn right here. All of that incoming, you know, and also, you know, we've got phones that are constantly buzzing or chiming or making stuff. All of those should be subtle audio cues that only you can hear. And socially, there's a lot of situations it's not appropriate to wear earbuds. It seems to me like that's the next, just like the wrist was free real estate. I feel like the ears are free real estate for the next.
I think that, you know, we've seen amazing developments in cochlear implants, though. Amazing stuff that people that, you know, did not have the ability to hear sound now have that. And we can bypass a lot of the brains, you know, a lot of the auditory hardware and just sort of jack into that at some point. And we can send sound to parts, you know, that where that didn't work. So that's been amazing. You know, what we need is we need that softer wetware kind of thing. So it's not like you're walking into the Apple store and they're taking a Phillips or their special, you know, unit screwdriver to the back of your head and undoing a plate and putting stuff in there. And I think that's going to be the big thing is when you start creating a sort of wetware kind of thing that's just doesn't feel that, you know, is in the kind of, you know, we have stuff that if you have an impairment you use now, you know, the world of artificial limbs is incredible where the developments are being made there, hips, things like that. Professional athletes may be actually trying to get surgery because of the improvements from certain things. The next step is you talk about like having hardware implanted. I think the big leap there is what he talks about, though, and that's the whole point, is that when we get this thing, this sort of more biological type technology like that, that's when it becomes, oh, yeah, I take a pill or I get this thing installed by taking an injection behind my ear. And then when it's 6 months later, unless I get another injection, it dissolves or whatever. You know, I think that's the big leap. But once that leap happens,
man. So, wow, 15 years to that leap. Like, what is there a proto version of that that exists?
Well, I mean, I don't know whether or not we've seen anything that like to the likes of which he is describing. But if what he is saying is that the idea that this would be, and however we want to term like mass accepted, like, you know, that it would be something that people could get done legally. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem unreasonable to me considering, you know, where we saw just a leap in like mobile processing over 15 years. Like, you know, like what will be 15 years from now in terms of what we think about in terms of computing?
I mean, let's not get hung up on timelines. Let's extend it and say, you know, it could be, you know, it'd be 2030, it might be 2060, you know, somewhere in there, you're able to do these very soft implants in there and then the hardware. And then I think that's the more interesting idea is that, you know, he's positing the idea that we have this evolution of our conscious moving at first, we're connected permanently to the cloud. And then we get to a point where we're living, you know, these thoughts that are going on in our heads are taking place on the computer.
Think about it this way, and not to go back to timelines, but 15 years ago, I mean, first of all, that's already kind of happened insofar as we have this external device that we carry around with us to connect us to the cloud at all times. We use it to find answers, to schedule things, to find out what other people want to tell us, to consume thoughts of other people. 15 years ago, none of this was possible. In the year 2000, think about how ridiculous our phones were and the fact that we would download stuff on our home computer and burn it out to a CD to take it with us to consume later. And nowadays, there's this, I got pulled over yesterday for doing like 10 over the speed limit. And he was like, yeah, proof of insurance. And I was like, I think, can I check my email and just show it to you? He's like, yeah, that's fine. And I'm like, oh, curse this signal. And then it's like, well, here's an email. Like, that's astonishing. 15 years ago, you couldn't just say, hey, can I just show you a picture on this device that says I have insurance? And he's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. I mean, it's like, I don't know. Once it happens, I do agree it will happen very, very fast. But it's like, I guess I have a hard time wrapping my mind around the proto version, because again, in 2000, there were hints that we wanted this, whatever. So once we get there, how fast does this take over? Like, do you sign up for first generation surgery?
I think, you know, I think we know it's going to be Larry Page and Sergey Brin and Kurzweil, and there's going to be a lot of prominent technologists who will. You know, and that's okay. So imagine Kurzweil is the first guy to say, all right, I'm going to plug myself into this thing. Oh, and here's a cool thing I can do is I can create 100 different versions of myself so I can go appear on 100 podcasts all at once. When we start seeing how that power manifests itself.
Yeah, I mean, do you think we perceive it as not the real Kurzweil, or how quickly do we accept the idea that Kurzweil is kind of a brand for the type of thinking that Kurzweil does?
So he's sitting here talking like I am, like we're like, oh yeah, da 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 da. Oh well, did you see Ex Machina? Oh yeah, I did. I thought this da 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 da. Oh, and we're having as real of an interaction with him as somebody else is, as he's having an interaction somewhere else.
Well, I mean, I assume it would be similar to how real would people think that what we are having is right now a conversation, like a telepresence that is not the rich analog sitting across from somebody conversation. That's something that I'm sure, you know, 30 years ago, people would think would be less than authentic. Whereas, you know, for us, it is the basis of, you know, our relationships.
Yeah, that's I mean, going back to a lower fidelity version of that, in his book On Writing, Stephen King makes the point that that writing itself is a curious type of one-way telepathy that sits independent of time and space. Is that he describes the place he is and what he's thinking about and what he's looking at, and you know, and he says, understand, it's open to your interpretation. You don't know how big or small the desk is that I just described, but you know, you might picture it this color or that color, but the fact is I am having an experience right now, and it is now existing in your mind, and I don't know where you are, how many years from now you're going to read this, and what part, you know, whether you're in space reading this or whatever. And there's a curious power to that remote telepresence, as you put it.
For sure. And I'm kind of fixated on the idea that once you're connected to the cloud and you're doing that, and not just the idea of like, well, now I've got a digital backup, but the idea of what that means from the concept of personality. Like I said, if Kurzweil becomes a guy that we can have a conversation with and he can be in 10 places at once, that's spooky. That is just this weird. It's that he is, you know, approaching something, you know, that we can't. The difference between him and us, you know, we end up being kind of closer to chimps in some ways.
Well, and you know, we've talked about this. I mean, imagine this. Imagine if, you know, Kurzweil had spent so much time talking, or any public figure or whatever, that like you kind of have a database, sort of like in Superman's Fortress of Solitude, you have recordings for just about anything Superman could think to ask his virtual parents. You know, we could have that for Kurzweil, either intentionally with Kurzweil or, you know, we'll say unintentionally. You know, we rewatched one of the old introductions to a Night Attack episode where it was pointed out, you know, that thousands and thousands of hours have been recorded between the three of us just talking about every potential thing. And if all of that were virtualized, categorized, and set up, you could very quickly parse a question and then get an answer from us about that subject.
Right. But I'm still hung up on this. Brian, imagine right now, there is Brian 1, Brian 2, Brian 3, Brian 4, Brian 5 going out there and doing Brian stuff. And then tonight you guys rejoin up and go back to master, you know, Brian Prime.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, or maybe even, I mean, maybe there doesn't even have to be a rejoining up. I mean, if there's some kind of, if you're connected to the cloud, why not a persistent connection between all of you? This is something that in the Dreaming Void trilogy, Peter F. Sure. Hamilton talks about, like, you know, in a post-singularity world, it's not enough to just back up your consciousness and then build another body when, you know, you suffer, quote-unquote, body loss, as the euphemism. Instead, it's like the end thing is to go multiple, and there's this awkward moment where after making love to three or four copies of this one guy, she says, wait a minute, how many of you are there? They're like 50. What are the other ones doing? It's like, well, right now one's doing actuarial tables and the other one's doing, you know, sweeping out the gutters and the other one's doing this.
So think about that. Just think about the idea that, like, either, you know, there's Brian Prime and all these other satellite Brians. What is and I mean, they could all be, one could be physical, but the other could be virtual, existing in virtual space and doing stuff. To me, I mean, that's just like, it's like, I think it changes the human question fundamentally.
I think once that happens, I think the idea of I think there is no Brian Prime. I think each of them are legitimate, and you know, it's you know, I think
the only reason why a hierarchy would be beneficial is if there is argument, right? Like the idea that there is a or I mean, this is something that we cannot know, but like, is there the capacity for argument? Like, you know, what is the limit to where we can argue with oneself?
And I think that you get into you're going to, because of time delays and things like that, you know, you're going to have these little subtle differences. And I like the idea of, and I think it could be choice. It doesn't have to be. There is always a prime. You know, if one Brian wants to go to Mars, well, guess what? You know, that guy's got to be a standalone unit, because just you can't transmit that information instantaneously.
Right.
You know.
Well, for while he's away, but then he comes back, and I would imagine that I feel whole with all six units in contact with each other. And one unit may go off the grid to do something and come back. And maybe he does something different than outside of the heat of the moment. The other Bryans would it's like hearing about it. It's like, oh, I really wish you'd done it. But the moment you sync up, you realize everything that went in, and you're like, and all the Bryans think, well, I would have done the same thing in that situation. But then again, like, if let's say, even if they don't like what he did, what you're describing is the phenomenon of being disappointed in yourself, which is something I experience every morning when I wake up and think about how the previous day went. I was like, oh, I really should have worked out, should have done this. I'm really disappointed in you, past Brian.
And I think that you might have, like, I mean, you might have discrete ones that are like, well, you know, guys, this has been great, but I want to go off and do my own thing, you know? And like, well, all right.
Man, that would be a fascinating element to a story where, let's say, there is, you know, multiple versions of somebody, and one of them decides to go and live in a small town. And then all of a sudden, one day, another one decides to go to Mars. Then one day, the one from Mars comes back, and all of them, after it rejoining a more consistent, you know, shared cloud basis, all of them instantaneously have a rush of understanding reality as, you know, a part of, you know, the part of them that went to Mars, you know, part of them that sacrificed. Maybe there was like some poop went down on Mars, and friends were lost, and it was a harrowing experience. Then all of a sudden you go from flipping, you know, burgers in a diner in you know, Michigan to being a space traveler, at least an element of a space traveler.
The kid that comes back after his first year away at college, you know.
Well, yeah, I know, but imagine, like, now all of a sudden it's part of you. It's you. You did that on some level.
So I like this idea of, like, picturing an element, like, for whatever reason, he's just in a different situation or whatever, and they decide to separate the bond, and then they come back, and even though they're genetically identical and they had the same upbringing and so on, you know, they've just been detached for, say, 5-6 years during this Mars journey or whatever. I would imagine the experience of coming back and talking to yourself without that cloud sync, you know, catch-up is a little bit like meeting an ex, where it's like, you know, because when you're dating someone, when you're in the thick of it, it's like you share everything and you feel completely connected to them, and you kind of act as a unit, and then that breaks down and leaves. And then, like, when you meet an ex years later, there's that weird detachment of like, huh, crazy. We used to be a thing, you and I. You know, we used to be the same person, and now we're not. I would imagine it's a lot like that, where it's like, wow, can you believe all of us were the same guy?
Or maybe a twin.
Yeah, but a twin, I don't think, has the emotional connection.
We're dealing with, it's like like, no, it would be more like gin, or it'd be more like vodka. And it's like, well, yeah, but
I guess
it is elements
is
of alcohol,
the sexual
right?
Like, component is what throws me. Is like, well, there's that, like, oh, well, I mean, that's the thing that throws me. Is like, well, like, you know, like this pair bonding thing that got broken apart, and that's, you know, the all the
well,
the
no. In that regard, I feel like the sexual element is a proxy for the level of intimacy and the you know, it's like when you have sex with someone, there's something strange about it where it's like it is an act completely without you drop all filters in that moment, and as a result you share something that you don't share with anyone else ever and never outside, and then when that ends, like, no longer do you have that coupling, that connection, but the secrets remain, and all you have is the memory of, like, we used to be at a level where we had shared this kind of intimacy and now we are not. I guess that's what I'm thinking of, except it's intellectual intimacy or emotional intimacy.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely. I think that there is – it's – these are weird questions, which we may have, you know, on a distant Weird Things podcast.
Dude,
Brian 3, Justin 8, Andrew 2000.
What fascinates me about these conversations Brian, I totally understand your – like meh, I don't know, time frame, like, you know, reaction. I pick up on that, but – what I do know is every year of my life, I've been fascinated and blown away with what, like, is accomplished, right? And so now the idea of thinking, the most exciting element of being alive right now is thinking, wait a minute, what's the surprise? Like, yeah. It's like watching Game of Thrones. It's like, well, what's this year's surprise? What's this year? What happens now that makes us completely open up new territories and new like, not only just new inventions, new fields of inventions for which impossibility is the only constant, you know?
So I saw Ex Machina.
Oh, doggone it. It was at a significant glance my way. I thought our agreement was that we were going to wait until it was rentable.
Well, no, our agreement was we're all going to see it in theaters, and then we all saw Mad Max instead.
Yes, no, and that's fine, but I thought last time Andrew and I had peeked in on that.
We're not gonna, well, I said we'd hold off the discussion until it was rentable, which is going to be like June 26, whatever. I had a friend Friday said, do you want to go see Ex Machina? And rather than go through the torturous explanation of be like, well, I'm a flake, my buddy Brian's a flake, and we've been kind of flaky, and to make ourselves feel less flaky, you know, we all decided that, I'll just go see it. There will be several interesting discussions, I think, that will stem from that, that can relate back to this. I thought it was a very well done film, and it's not the plot I would have written, but it's a very, yeah, very well done plot.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the way that I think things would play out, but I think that he did a wonderful way of telling the story.
I don't know if you heard, Justin just asked what a comparable film would be. I guess in terms of plot, or are we looking at a Planet of the Apes, a Fight Club, a 2001?
You know, it's hard because, like, the number of, like,
a Source Code.
Well, I mean, of really, really, really good sci-fi that can be reduced down to two or three person sort of dramas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, is, you know, it's Primer, you know,
yeah, or Moon,
yeah. And so,
dude, if it's in the same clubhouse, I mean, as flawed as it was, you know, I love me some Primer. As flawed as it was, I loved Upstream Color and Moon. If it's in that ballpark, then I am in.
I mean, it's Alex Garland who wrote and directed it. He's the guy that wrote the book The Beach was based upon. He's the guy that wrote Dread. He is an extremely talented writer, and this is his first boot as a director, and I think he knocked it out of the park.
Great.
All the performances are fantastic. Very, very, very well done.
Well, then, okay. Well, then I think it's still playing at the Draft House, so I'll make the effort.
Yeah,
to
you can see it. Don't. I'm not going to hold on, Brian. I said that, you know, wait till video. We can wait till if you can see it before.
Well,
I recommend.
No. Like I almost went this past week, but I was like, oh, that's right, we're doing video. I won't do it. But I may sneak off and see a matinee or something.
Justin, do you see it? No, you didn't.
I have not. No.
Oh yeah. So yeah, I think it gets into a big question. I think that we've talked about this before, which, you know, you have the ability to create multiple versions of yourself. It's not a plot to anything in Ex Machina, by the way. It's like, what do you do? You know, I've been going back and listening to, like, old kind of turn of the century and older, you know, 19th to 20th motivational books. you know, As a Man Thinketh and things like that. And then a little bit later on, Napoleon Hill,
yeah,
all that. And it's
some Dale Carnegie.
Yep. You know, and with, you know, and it's interesting because there's a theme there, which, spoiler alert, Napoleon Hill, he talks about what the secret is, what's the whole secret that it's about, that the men who have the most successful men in the world have learned.
Yeah.
Free will.
Right on. They can decide to do something.
I don't say that in a light way. It's that once you realize, oh, you know, the reason this person succeeded, this person does, because this person said, I am going to do this and I will not stop until I do this, while other people would give up or whatever.
Yeah.
But that comes down to the whole idea of desire and determination. If we create, you know, super intelligent robots or copies of ourselves, we got to, well, what are we going to do? You know, what's Brian number? If you had a Brian two, Justin, you had a Justin number two,
mm-hmm.
What would you assign him to do?
Well, I mean, initially, I would probably think if he was a separate entity for which was, you know, I mean, I guess the what I would want to do is tell him to do all the things that I don't want to do and that yet I have to do, like that I have to be a part of. So right now it would be like planning the wedding. I would have him do that. The reality is that if there was a Justin too and I told him to do something, he would probably tell me, no, why do I have to do it? You do it.
Well, and plus also, like, all of the kind of selfish, you know, we all have our list of things we know we ought to do, you know, and then and there's stuff we choose to do instead. Part of the reason we choose to do it is because we want the pleasure and the memory of it. But if it's like, if it's a case where it's like, hey, you, if it's a case where you're going to sync up and get the full benefit of those memories either way, then you kind of, I would assume, don't really care whether it's you or the other guy, or in fact, like, and it's not even like you would keep track where it's like, why do I always have to do the hard thing? Because you wouldn't remember which one of you did or even care. Like once you sync up where it's like, oh, why am I always the one that has to get the email box clean?
Yeah. But also like in, I was having a conversation, you know, the other day, about, you know, writing partnerships. And, you know, like talk about Matt Stone and Trey Parker and how you have one guy really is the big driving force behind it. One guy is the guy that really does most of it and really handles it. But the other guy is an important part of it and an important part of that team. And there doesn't seem to be an animosity between them.
Well, I would say that they are both equally important in that clearly, and I forget which one is the one. There's one of them that is better about
Trey Parker's the dynamo, and Matt Stone is incredibly important and has been there since day one.
Well, yeah, there was, I forget where I read it, but there's this breakdown, this ebb and flow, and if you ever watch 6 Days to Air, I think it is, the documentary breaking it down, you see the dynamic between them where it's like, in the idea genesis phase, they're both barfing out ideas, spitballing back and forth or whatever, but they reach this moment where it's like they've gotten enough of the ideas out that it's now time to get a first draft written. And it's not productive to have both of them, you know, take one page at a time. That's the part of the machine that needs one part to synthesize. And what happens is, you know, Trey goes and writes a first draft and he's just spent, and he comes back and he's under pressure and he doesn't have what it takes, you know, and you know, I've seen this, you know, as we worked on the pitches for Hacking the System. I see this in the emails that I do with John, with the pitches we did and the script ideas for Hacking the System. I love molding something there. I love editing. I love taking, it's like, oh, if you move this and piece this together, then this would flow much better or whatever. And I also love idea genesis. It's just that blank page that I can't spit even a first draft out.
Right. But I guarantee you if Matt got mono, South Park would still come out. If Trey got mono, South Park would,
I mean, that's fine. If you want to decide that you could pick a winner of that relationship, I don't know what the value is in that. But I mean, it definitely
you equate it to a winner. It's no. It's a weird way to go. I think it's Matt, you know, Trey likes to have Matt. Matt needs to be involved, and Matt is very much involved with it. Trey can pull all the switches and can do this sort of stuff and make it happen. Maybe not for very long. You know, but
no, I mean, you're right, but I suspect if it's anything like my,
like yours, but go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. Whatever. My guess is you're right. He could, but I'm also going to guess that he wouldn't. And if he wouldn't, then that's the same as he couldn't, you know, if absent of Matt, Trey doesn't do anything, then clearly he couldn't do it on his own. I think we could
get a couple episodes out of him, and I think that then it would, you know, he needs Matt, you know, as an integral part of keeping the thing going. And I guess my point is that, like, he's a person that's probably doing the lion's share of that creativity. Matt is a person that's helping him keep moving along. And that's like I'm getting into as we talk about, like, having and splitting into different personalities and stuff. There's a relationship where there's not a lot of argument because, you know, Trey finds Matt an integral part of it, although Trey is the guy who, from the outside, is doing most of the lifting.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that.
Well, and there's also, for them, they are two guys who are certainly not without egos, and deservedly so, considering what they've accomplished. Matt is a intense part of that relationship just because it appears from, and this is just being a fan of their work and either watching stuff and reading interviews, Matt might be one of the few people on Earth that can tell Trey his idea is dumb and they need to change it. Like, you know, there is an element for which they very much believe in not holding anything sacred and making sure that it's all good. But when you've accomplished as much as they've accomplished, it's easy to be like, no, I'm a comic genius. I say it's good. It's good. And to everybody else, I don't know if many people hold that weight in the way that, you know, they look at each other and say, yeah, if somebody thinks this is BS, then it's probably BS and I need to change it.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's sort of, I don't know. I mean, going back to the stuff we talked about, you know, the left and right hemisphere. I don't know.
Well, I mean, because really, how much of that is life and good decision making, and even the free will that, you know, Andrew has rescued the knowledge from the turn of the century, that it's not necessarily making the decision; it's sticking with the decision, and sticking with the decision. The real, you know, what goes into that sausage is dealing with failure, dealing with self doubt, and dealing with progress, making sure that you're gaining progress. So, you know, you can mitigate the self-doubt with little doses of, like, I'm at least making an inch or two of progress, or I feel better about my output. And what if that wasn't an internal dialogue? What if that was, you had your own writer's room, you had your own, I mean, that's the greatest thing about 6 Days to Air, is that not only Matt Stone and Trey Parker, but also you bring in guys like Bill Hader and writers that they've worked with forever, that they're, you know, what if that is, you know, the Herman's Head is a dated reference and Inside Out is a modern reference. You know, all the little pieces that put together this larger whole, but it's all us, you know, like that's amazing. That's crazy.
Yeah, man, it's weird. It's reading Incognito back in the day. And I know, Andrew, you've expressed some hesitations about some of the ideas in it, but the idea that that the brain is a consensus. The brain is basically Congress, and, you know, you got left brain, right brain are the Democrats and the Republicans. And granted, one side or the other could run the country on their own. It would look very different either way, or, you know, mostly it'd look the same, but there would be some very significant differences. But that, you know, actions and decisions are made when both sides reach consensus. I don't know. That's a very interesting idea to me.
That's very persuasive. Yeah, that's David Eagleman who wrote that. I'm friends with David. And David's very, very, very smart guy, very intelligent guy. You know, and mine was more about the research into does time expand or not. It was, you know, like in moments of accidents.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, slow down and yeah.
Because it just – I don't know if experimentally that was as robust enough to find out or not. Because it's one of those things, like, anecdotally, there's so many accounts of that. And you're like, I mean, maybe does it expand after the fact? And is there some process that takes place later on that then goes back and then is able to decrypt that information before it's lost? And there are a lot of these little factors that come into play. But anyway, Eagleman's – I very highly recommend reading Eagleman in your suggestion of Incognito. Eagleman's very, very – he's funny because he's a – brilliant neuroscientist, but he talks like this, dude.
Oh, does he?
He's like, yeah.
I've never heard him talking. I think his book was read by someone else.
Yeah. Hey guys, I know we're kind of running toward the end of the episode here, but I got to share this story.
What you got,
Brian? It's a tale of love.
Love's good.
Yeah,
makes the world go round.
Of yearning, of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Of evil spirits.
If this is about Hearthstone again, I don't think it's going to go over well with the audience.
No, it's not. But it is almost as expensive as having a Hearthstone addiction. It is a tale for which by the end of it will have erased 713,975 dollars.
$700,000? Almost $1 million?
Almost $1 million.
Okay, now is this your story?
No, this is a story that comes to us from the windswept hamlet of Brooklyn, New York. 32-year-old Brooklyn man.
Yeah.
Meets a girl, not to be. She, you know, he's in love. She wants nothing to do with him.
Oh my God.
So he decides, you know, he's just lovelorn, can't figure it out. All of a sudden, ends up almost by serendipity in front of a psychic. Walks in. Psychic tells him, I can, spirits talk to me, buddy. And you two, you and this lady, twin flames. It's only the fact that evil spirits surround her that you guys are not together forever.
All right.
I mean, right. Let's trust, you know, these spirits, they're psychologists. They're therapists. They know a lot about relationships, or they're just dead people.
All right. Well, here, you're the guy, right? Okay.
Look, this is kind of nutty. I was just walking by and I saw your sign. I'm in the middle of a bit of a relationship crisis. There's a girl I really dig. Could your connection to the spirit world help me? Could you give me insight?
Absolutely, dude. We can get this done immediately.
Oh, that's
all
great.
All I need is $2,500.
I mean, that's rather expensive, but I'm going to assume. I mean, you got a sign and you're in yellow pages.
Do you want true love or not?
No,
because
no,
I mean, yeah. Like, true love is at the end of this if you just give me $2,500.
In the great scheme of things, $2,500 is nothing. Let me grab that. I'm just going to hit 6 different ATMs. You know,
also, by the way, you are a young professional doing very, very well in New York City.
Oh, great. Yeah, no, I can afford this. So let me go to 7 ATMs, hit the limit on each of them, and I'll be right back. And boop, boop, boop.
Okay, we do a few consultations. Listen, this is a bit of a real sticky situation. I'm going to need $9,000 more.
Well, I mean, yeah, just to recap, I know we've been doing this for a week. What have I gotten so far out of this relationship?
Well, number one, I've identified the spirits. I know where they're affecting her psyche, and I know exactly what we need to do. I just need $9,000, and then I can tell you what the solution will be.
Well, wait a second. You don't need this $9,000. This is probably going to some sort of purpose, though, right?
Certainly. In fact, by the way, I mean, come on. I got ahead of myself. You're going to get all this money back at the end. I just kind of need some operating capital.
So it's sort of like an investment.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get investment. Hold on. I'm going to go cashier's check will be okay for this, right?
Cool.
All right.
So I've done a little research. You are going to need some diamonds to ward off the spirits. So I found this great talisman that will help you. You don't even need to wear it, by the way.
Oh.
You just need to purchase it. You can give it to whoever you want. You know, I've always loved diamonds personally, but like,
well, as your assistant, let me point out, okay, you know, Justin is going to be dealing with the evil powers and diamonds protect evil. Nothing's harder than diamond, right?
It's science. No. It's impenetrable. I mean, evil can't penetrate, you know, the carbon network.
So unless you want the evil to attack the person trying to help you.
No.
Yeah.
So good point. I mean, we need to shield you, right? You're out there in the trenches battling evil. They have nefarious thoughts in mind. We gotta shut that business down.
It's just $40,000.
All at once, or can we do an installment payment plan?
No, you kind of, Tiffany's doesn't do a layaway, bro. You kind of need to just that card.
Listen, I'm going to go take out a quick mortgage.
You've got some money. You've got a business.
No, no, you're good. You're good, yeah.
Oh, great. Great. Well, it's more than I planned to spend, but heck, in for a penny, in for 40,000. That's what I say.
With this ring's power, I have warded off the spirits. Great news.
So she'll take my phone calls now because that's
you
what...
You are going to head to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You need to go to her. We're out of the woods, bro. You are about to be united with your twin flame.
Oh, dude, I'm excited. I'm gonna book the ticket right now.
So meanwhile, you go to Los Angeles, make plans. Initially, your long lost love says, sure, yeah, we're in. Then you get together and you're ready, or sorry, you're about to ready to have a fun night on the town. She backs out, doesn't answer your calls.
Oh, it must be the evil spirits, because she said yes and then she pulled back away, right? So let me just call my psychic real quick. Beep, boop, boop, mm-hmm. boop, beep, boop, boop. Ring.
Hello?
Hey, what's up? I think the evil spirits got through. I think there's something wrong with the talisman, because we were going to go on the date and she totally pulled back.
That's what that was.
Wait,
because I was just sitting here and I was like, wait a minute. Is that a breeze or is that an evil spirit? Like, it was like 50-50 for me. Like, I didn't know which one was which. It had to be that evil spirit. Here's the deal. I just kind of need 28,000 more. Also, I need another 28,000 after that. But we're close.
Okay, and just so I can explain to my accountant, this is all going to...
So it's to bring you... Because here's the thing. We're so close. She obviously was reaching out to you. The evil spirit again, took hold of her. Also... you want to know what? You might as well just go ahead and add on to that. We're going to need to have a fake funeral, right? Just to bury the evil spirit. So on top of the two installments of 28K, we're going to need another 40K to do this thing right.
Right. I'm still on those first two. Like, what are we buying with the 28,000?
We need to stop thinking. All right, so here we go. So the 28,
yeah.
You're good for it. In fact, I just have your card. I'm just running it right now. Well, don't worry. You'll thank me later.
Right, okay.
40,000, we're going to do our fake funeral, right? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Turns out that isn't exactly what we need. So bear with me.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
What we need is for you to go back in time.
I'm sorry. Is that you mean like on a spirit quest or in a time machine?
Well, no. Sorry. You don't go back in time, Brian. Justin would be going back in time.
Oh, yes. On my behalf.
I need to go back in time and
Brian,
cleanse.
You wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
You screwed it up last time. You'll screw it up again.
Right, but
that's like putting a dog behind a wheel of a car. You know, what do you expect them to drive? Sure.
But I
got to go back in time.
That's a thing you can do? You have that talent?
I mean, if you don't think that that's plausible, you could just go ahead and I can do most of what I need to do with just another talisman. This one needs to be a watch.
What kind of watch?
Well, you can't use any crappy Seiko watch. You need a very quartz is the most precise time measurement you can commercially buy. But no, you need a really precise man-made.
So here's the thing. I'm texting you right now.
Okay.
A menu of all the watches that we could do. You are a man of exceptional means, and you really want to show that you're taking this seriously. So I would assume that the top one, which is a rose gold Rolex for $30,000, would probably be most to your taste.
Sure. And this will let you keep track when you go back in time to battle evil.
Yeah. In fact, you want to know what? I just already got it.
Oh, good.
So you thank you.
Yeah.
Turns out. Good news, bad news.
Yeah, yeah.
Good news, got the watch.
Yeah.
Looks great. Bad news, it didn't. I came close. Oh, man, so close.
You went back to battle the spirit, but you need a way to trap the spirit.
Yeah.
Let's go back and kill Hitler. Oh, we forgot to bring a gun.
Or we forgot to put a cage. Like, you got Hitler in a headlock. And then he's all like, Mein Kampf. He's like, that's right. And then you're like, what do I do now? You're like, well, I'll get him next time.
I'll tell you what, man. I bet you're sick of spending all this money, right?
I mean, I I'll do what it takes. I mean, it is a little more expensive than I thought it'd be.
We got to finish this. I'm tired of screwing around. We've been out here pussyfooting with this here spirit, making sure that you get the lady love for which you have desired. I'm tired of it. We need to end this once and for all.
Right on. So what do you suggest?
The only thing we can do. The only logical solution.
Which, of course, is?
I mean, I'm surprised we're not saying it. 3, 2, 1. We say it at the same time.
Okay, all right.
3, 2, 1.
I call her.
80-mile bridge of gold.
Well, I said I was going to call her, but it sounded, maybe it was something weird on the connection, but it sounded like you said an 80-mile bridge made of gold. Now, when you say gold, you don't mean painted gold. You mean it's made of the gold of...
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the nether realm, of course, bridges to lure evil spirits are made of gold. We need an 80...
virtual goods, Brian. Have you ever paid for a virtual good?
Yeah, sure. So you're not saying we even actually build it. We virtually build it in the spirit realm.
In the spirit world, yeah. It's an 80-mile bridge.
You know what a permit would cost
gold
for that alone, let alone the gold?
It's a good point. So how is there an exchange rate between my – how many U.S. dollars does
Man,
this –
Man, you are in luck because I got a guy. We're going to hook this up at a price. It's going to be sweet.
Okay. How much are we looking at?
Oh, man, it's like you're going to look at the end of this. You're going to be like, man, I might as well have got it for free.
I'll tell you what, man, when I first walked in, it did not occur to me that you would end up selling me a bridge. But here we are.
So here's the deal. And by the way, my guy is taking a bath on this. All right.
OK. Like, all right.
Just he's soaking at cost. $80,000 for the 80-mile bridge of gold into the nether realm that will trap the spirit forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I mean, we're a half million in at this point, right? I guess I should just go ahead and jump in.
Of course. All right. So we built the bridge.
Boss man, Justin.
Yeah.
Listen, the bridge turned out wonderful. I think the spirit's going to go across it. It turned out really good.
Yes.
The thing is, it's like, you know, he's in love with her. I think her spirit might be trapped on the other side, though, and we need to get it back. And it'll probably have to be a little bit longer, though.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. here's the problem. Is this the point in which we want to have him check Facebook?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're like, hey man, thank you. Like, you show up, I'm at the front desk, I'm like, oh, so glad you can make it here. Things are going really, really, really well. Why are you crying, sir? what's the matter? He's crying. He's like blubbering.
Yeah.
Something about he looked on Facebook and
so it turns out. Yeah, she's been dead for 9 days.
Oh, dear. That would explain why she hasn't been returning my phone calls.
Drug overdose.
And maybe that would explain why she's on the wrong side of the
bridge. You come in and confront.
Look, man, what the hell? What is this? She's been dead for 9 years.
Nine days.
She's been dead for 9 days.
Yeah. Can you believe it?
No. You told me that if we build this bridge, it would protect her from the evil spirits and that we could get her back.
Dude, scumbags. They got her.
What?
We thought we'd box this mother in. And then just when we thought we had it, it sprung out of the only crevice of that beautiful 80-mile golden bridge and struck this beautiful flower down.
Remember, guys, I'm sorry. And Bri, Justin will tell it to you, but, you know, you did kind of hesitate a bit on giving the money for the bridge.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if we had built that bridge a little faster. I mean, I'm not one to point fingers here. But, you know, like, if maybe we would have built this bridge a little faster.
All right,
remember that other guy that built the bridge when we asked him to?
My God. Hey, by the way, you might have heard his Warren Buffett. That's who he is.
Real quick, let me press pause here because I'd really like to think that the next thing I do is file a lawsuit in this scenario. Please tell me that's what I do.
Not there yet.
Oh. No, listen. I know you're a little broken up.
Yeah, a little bit.
Obviously, listen, these spirits, they're very, very tricky. I have one thing I need to tell you.
Okay, what's up?
Do you think Brian would be willing to go? Do you think he loves her enough to go for that upgrade, that special package? Do you think he loves her enough?
You want to know, like, all I've been doing is getting yelled at by me and my friends hanging out at the Psychic Club, where we all talk about our life, you know, and our work. And all they've been telling me is, oh, old slow to build the bridge, McGee, he doesn't need it. He's not worth it. Like, but I'm saying I believe in you. I think, all right, if we can work it out, and this, I'm just going to let you know, it ain't going to be cheap, I can resurrect her.
Holy crap, bring her back literally from the dead.
Yeah, I'm going to reincarnate her.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, how much is that?
I don't know where it is from here. It was another couple $28,000 installments, but eventually, you know, I'm like, hey, listen, figured it out. Reincarnated, bro. High five.
Woo.
Reincarnated. Reincarnated.
So you'll give me your phone number, right? Or a name, mm-hmm. or an image of, yeah. of where should I go?
Yep. Los Angeles.
Oh, it won't be easy for Justin to do this, by the way. And it's going to take a lot of time. And I tell you what, like, he's been so busy working on us, he forgot to pay his rent. So we might need a little more money.
Let me just real quick cover your rent. What is that? Two grand, maybe?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I just noticed that, you sold your car. You used to drive here to the psychic shop, and now you're taking the subway.
I mean, that's fine. It's all worth it for love, right? Am I right? High five,
and also,
fellas.
You're borrowing the money now from friends and family. You've pretty much spent away your entire empire
here in New York City. Like you said, I'm accruing assets in the spirit realm, and there'll be dividends, you know, that they're investments.
But here you go. It's the new Michelle. New Michelle is here.
Go to
L.A.
All right. I'm going to L.A. This address right here? Just show up and say hi?
Yep.
Well, she might be there at some point, you know, at Hometown Buffet. You know, a lot of people walk through the doors.
All right. So I guess what? I just look for her. And is it the kind of thing where it's like I'll know her when I see her, that kind of deal?
Sure. Also, she's 31. She's 24. And not 31.
Oh, I mean, that's. I would imagine her spirit would occupy a young, more vibrant. So you have a particular person in mind, right?
Yep.
Yes, we do.
All right, and you got a name.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay, right on. Yeah, no, I'm going to head on over and introduce myself.
And so things don't go well, and you determine that Michelle is not inside this woman.
Yeah, look, we hung out, and I asked her what her favorite song was, and she said an Elvis song, and Michelle was a Beatles girl, so I'm afraid this clearly is not Michelle. I asked her to play Hearthstone, and she said...
The number for the mailbox you have called is full. Please hang up and dial again.
All right, let me try it again. That's a little bit weird. Let me call the same number I've called a million times before. Beep, 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 beep.
It's at this point that you file a lawsuit.
Wow. But against whom? I mean, are we able to find the person? Or?
No, you don't file a lawsuit.
Oh, no. Sorry. No. You just go to the, you go to the police.
At
this point, according to the New York Times, he had lost his apartment. He had had enough and returned to New York. Sought out Mr. Nygaard, and they went to the police in May. The bank statements were given to the detectives. He was out a grand total of $713,975.
His name was Mr. Nygaard, straight out of Fargo, the TV series. That's amazing.
Meanwhile, the police arrested Miss Del Moro, the psychic, and her companion, Bobby Evans, May 26, in a restaurant in Midtown Manhattan, in which the writer, not unfairly editorializing, I believe, points out for dramatic effect was a steakhouse. They were charged with grand larceny and to this day remain in jail.
So here's the thing. For it to be grand larceny, wouldn't the state need to prove that they knowingly were defrauding this man, right?
Yes.
Like, hypothetically, and I'm not saying that
now,
this is the
now,
case.
Now, hold on, wait. I need you. Well, here, let's get to the end, because, like,
all right.
This article is written in a very annoying way, and yet there's the final paragraph is actually kind of a thing of beauty. So let's get all the questions out, and then we'll wrap this segment
sure.
on the final paragraph.
So my questions are just, you know, like in a sideways universe where she actually believes all this with her heart. And to be honest, you know, we've seen lots of cases where so-called psychics are able to convince themselves after the fact that they really did have this ability or believe their stuff. Like, if she actually believed, is it fraud?
Yeah, it is. I mean, no, that's not the definition of fraud isn't contingent upon what the person states that they believe, because a car salesman who sells you a beat up car that's new and says, no, I believe this to be real. I believe this to be real. Like, well, yeah, but we found the statement in your office, you know, where you bought this and the paperwork said that it was not. You can claim whatever you believe, but if the evidence shows that this was, you know, not likely to be true, you know, it.
Yeah,
well,
I think the big key would be whether or not, like, what she did with this money past getting it.
Got
beyond
it.
Like, you know,
if she said that she was going to give this money to someone or spend this money in a way to do things like in the audit, she would need to point like, yeah, no,
she needs to show her receipts on the foreman's cost and Netherrealm permits for building the 80-mile bridge of gold.
Right.
Like, often, like, what they do is, like, in the gypsy scams is they'll take the money and they say, okay, we burned the money.
Yeah, correct.
And you show the money was not burned, you know.
All right, that's fair enough.
Donation to X or whatever, and that did not take place.
Yeah, that definitely makes it. Okay, all right. So I'm satisfied. We're gonna throw these guys into jail.
Now here is, I mean, just the Brian. I just need you to read it in full again. This is after $700,000 of his own money is taken. This is the final paragraph of this New York Times story.
You know, sitting here recalling my disappointment, it was when I met New Michelle that I had this thought, quote, you know, Del Mar-o may not be everything she was purporting to be. After $700,000 and you meet this new chick and you're like, you know, maybe she's not everything she says she is.
That's amazing. It's so sad, right? Like, I mean, and obviously, listen, we are all people for whom have found fascinating on some level the world of, you know, scams and cons and carny elements and you know, the idea of the sharps and the marks and everything. But holy smokes, man. Talk about a, you know, a New York City swindle on the scales of which, you know, is just so iconic.
I mean, I want to know this guy's backstory. Like, how did he make that money?
Like a marketing company.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
You know.
Feely.
Making dummies buy things.
No. Well, but also, I mean, that tends to be a very kind of touchy-feely way to make a lot of money. And, you know, because, like, if you told me he was a network engineer or something, I would have been a lot more surprised, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's certainly something that, you know, you hope that, man, at some point, hi, everybody. My name is Justin Robert Young for the Weird Things Podcast. If you or a friend have started pouring a ton of money into a fortune teller, hoping to reunite you with a long-lost love, please talk to them. Like, at some point, just be like, hey, man, you want to know what? Let's just have a chat. You know, tell someone you love that you are spending hundreds of thousand dollars on a fortune teller who is, you know, making you buy things at a $30,000 appointment clip.
Yeah.
And I will tell you too, what's insidious is I have a friend whose mom was educated woman, you know, nurse, you know, had nurse, all this very, very smart woman. And she had this shaman or somebody she would go to, and then, like, you know, I would show up one day and there's this, like, 6-foot-tall giant candle thing or whatever. And, like, oh yeah, no, it was a gift from this woman and all that. She would never admit that she was giving this woman money. Never admit that it wasn't giving money, because it was always coached in something else. It was like, because it's a friend or somebody else says, she's not going to ask you for money if you could help her out. There are all these insidious ways it takes place. So you ask, like, no, she's never asked for anything from me. Never asked for anything. Like, okay, has there been any flow of money from you or to a cause or something she supports? Like, oh yeah, there's this charity thing that she says that I should support, you know, and it's like this for Benefit Nepal or some other, but not the Nepal charity or whatever. It was always these other little things. It's like, you know, she's been bilking you ten thousands of dollars, you know, and it was just, and I just, I'm like, this is obvious to anybody standing outside looking, like, yes, they've given you intelligent reasons for you to tell yourself, no, no, I'm not, she's not bilking, she's my friend, and she's my close personal friend. Yeah, and she's exploiting you, you know, and that's what's one of the problems of being wealthy is there's a lot of people around you that will take advantage of you.
Well, and for, you know, I think we all have a stake in what the point of the power of storytelling is, right? There is no, I mean, this, we told a great story right now, telling this man's story. He was living that story and lived it in a world and bought the idea that just around the corner was the most amazing tale of his life. And, you know, that's the power of getting hooked on an idea, hooked on a feeling. Ooga chaka, ooga chaka.
Hey, man, we're at 70 minutes. Do you think it's worth it to push picks to after things? Cause,
surely. Let's do that.
Okay. Because there's a lot of stuff. I want to double down on talking about the content. There's a lot of good content coming out.
Do we just want it for people who only listen to weird things? Do we just want to say the picks and then discuss them afterward? Or, like, do we want this to be a hook?
Streaming now on Netflix.
What is it?
The Great Escape. Streaming on Netflix right now.
The Great Escape. The original or?
The original, yeah. Of course.
Right on. I do want to talk about that. I'm watching Sense8. Watched the first three episodes. Want to talk about that. And I went and saw Rick and Morty season 2 preview with Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland last night. It was really, really, really good. It was fun.
I will say FSL Tonight. If you like this show and you like me and Tom Merritt, the new season has begun. Head on over to FSLTonight.com or Patreon.com/FSLTonight. No more Kickstarter, all Patreon. And you can get behind-the-scenes access, the likes of which we have never, ever offered before.
Yeah.
It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.